When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back. It's Recovery Sort Of, the podcast where we explore the struggles of life, the challenges of mental health and recovery, and the spaces between. We express our personal views on life here, and this podcast is not meant to replace medical advice or tell anyone the right way to live. This podcast is best used as a place of curiosity and questioning to accompany you on your journey. Be aware there is strong language. Here we go. Welcome back. You know who we are. Hi, Billy. How you doing?
Hey, good. How are you, Jason?
I'm good, man. I'm actually excited because I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation because we don't really have a topic or know where we're going, but it seems fascinating. So you're actively still participating in a 12-step fellowship or program, I guess. You brought forth a topic that you, in that program, you're sponsoring an individual. And there's some questioning I hear about how to do that. Like, where is the limit? Where's the line? How do we decide what's enough giving or where we're allowed to say no? And like, I think that is a hugely important exploration of, for each of us, of who the fuck we are.
Yes.
What life means to us. Like, I think this is a huge question you're asking in a very small way, but I love it. It's a great place to start.
So, yeah. So I'll just, I'm in a 12-step recovery program, and of course we do sponsorship, and your sponsor is the person that directs you through the steps. And I've sponsored quite a few people over the years, and I've had a similar situation, but it's fairly, I'll say, common. Like, people come into the recovery process, they're usually in like a recovery house, you know, they get real connected with the recovery community, go to lots of meetings, start working steps, start doing, get a job, start getting their life together. And then when they leave that structured program, they fall back into using. And so this happened very recently with the guy that I felt pretty close with. I mean, he had joined my same home group, so I saw him all the time. We kept in touch on a regular basis, had him over to my house a couple times for things, and, you know, genuinely cared about the guy, thought we had a great relationship, thought he was doing phenomenal. Everything, you know, was going great. And he left his recovery house and got a apartment on his own, and within a very short amount of time was drinking. And I don't place judgments. I have friends that have decided to use and left 12-step recovery. And there is a difference between someone who decides they want to use and is managing their life and doing what they want to do and don't feel like it's a problem. I think that's possible. I used to not think that. I used to think anybody that uses
think that was
is
possible.
100% fucked up, and it's just a matter of time, ticking time bomb. And I'm not going to lie, there's still an inside part of me that thinks that that's what's going to happen.
That's
but
fair.
I have enough people around that aren't doing that.
Let me share with you, there's a part of me inside that still says, this can't be a permanent answer. I get that.
So, and everybody's situation is different, right? Like, I know yours, you know, because we've talked about it enough. I work with actually two different guys, you know, who even their decisions around going back to using substances, like, their situations are very different. One just feels like it's a recreational thing. I guess he feels like he's grown beyond addiction, and now he still goes to fish shows and whatever, you know what I mean? That it's that. It's that. But he says he doesn't do it all the time, and it's just every now and again, and he's fine, and whatever. I work with him, seems fine. There's no reason for me to question any of it,
right?
But whatever, you know, everybody has their own reasoning, and they're all people, like, we've had conversations, like, they've disclosed that to me, like, hey, I've using, you know what I mean, and whatever. And I know that's different than what we know of each other in the past.
Right.
How you have that conversation.
It's weird.
But, and I'm always like, hey, man, if you're happy in your life and doing what makes you happy, then I'm not here to judge. Probably not going to go hang out with you at a fish show, you know, smoking weed. But, you know, I don't like fish anyway. But
yeah, me either.
Eating it or going to the music. Yeah. But, but, you know, I'm not here to judge people anymore. There was a time in my life where I definitely did. Not now. Anyway, this guy isn't that. He started drinking, and I guess it got real bad real quick. And so he reached out, and he called, and yeah, you know, I'm really sorry. He's apologizing to me. I'm like, you don't owe me an apology. Like, it's your life. You make decisions that you want. If you want some help, I can help you. I'm willing to help you. And it started off, yeah, I think I want to get into treatment. You know, I'm going to try to get back into treatment. I said, okay, well, I can help you with that. You know, I have resources to help with stuff like that. You know, the organization my wife works with, I was like, yeah, I can come pick you up after I get off work. I can come get you. We can go in there, you know, whatever you need. Right. We can make it happen. Oh, well, I'm taking care of it. I got some things. I just want to let you know, sorry, whatever. Okay. So then I reach out to him when I get off work. Hey, did you still want me to come get you? Were you still trying to get into treatment? And I guess by then he was more drunk. So he's like, no, you know, I think I'm good. I'm still working on it, but I need some food. Can you get me some food? And I said, all right, well, let me give you a call when I get home. Maybe I'll come down or something. You know, this was like a half hour later because I had to go home and check in with my wife and what's going on. So I check in. Nothing. You know, I check, hey, did you want some food? I can get you something, bring it down, drop it off or whatever. Nothing. Doesn't get back to me. 3 hours later, calls back. Hey, what's going on? You know, calls me like four times, blowing up my phone. And I'm just like, man, and now he's even more drunk. I can tell from the message. I know he had drunk called a bunch of our other friends. And, you know, just it was like, ugh. And so anyway, where that all goes is like, then I'm like, all right, look, I said, I can order some food and get it taken to your house because I don't feel like I want to put myself in a situation where I'm going dealing with a drunk person.
Right.
You know, I just don't feel like, one, I don't feel like it's a safe situation for me. I don't know this guy in that particular element. I definitely wouldn't have went by myself. I would have tried to get somebody else to go with me. But at the same time, I'm providing him resources and opportunities to take care of this, and he's not jumping at the chance. You know what I mean? I'm like, hey, this organization has food. If you want some food, you know, we can get you some food. Hey, this organization has access to, you know, if you're drinking and you can't drive, we can get you a ride. Hey, we can get you into treatment, like, now if you want to go to treatment now. You know, and it's like, help me. Mm-hmm. I want what I want. Mm-hmm. I don't want the help that I think I'm asking for is the way that I felt.
Right.
So anyway, immediately, like, I start to shut down and disengage. Here's a person that a week before that I would have told you, oh, I love this guy. I help him with anything. You know, he's a great guy, wonderful person. And now, like, a week later, I'm almost like, I don't want to deal with this motherfucker anymore. Like, and, you know, I felt bad. There was a part of me that felt bad. I did reach out a day or two later. Hey, how's it going? You know, are you doing okay? And he gave me the same line all over again. Yeah, I'm trying to get into treatment. And, you know, from there, I'm just like, well, good luck. If I can help you in any way, let me know. And I kind of left it at that. And there's a part of me that feels guilty. Like, I should be doing more. I should be reaching out more. I should be trying, you know. But then at what point, like, is it unhealthy or unsafe to help people who are using? And of course, in, you know, my world of 12-step recovery, there's always been these stories of, you know, people going in and dragging people out of crack houses, right, and you know, all that sort of shit and getting them into treatment.
Right.
Let me just say that has never been me and probably will never be me. Now, I shouldn't say that, because as soon as I say that, I'm going to end up doing that at some point. But it's just, that's not the, like, I'm like, hey, I'll help you in any way that you want help. But if you're not asking me for help, I'm not forcing help on you. Other than if I thought you were going to kill yourself, I might try to get you committed, like, to an institution so that you didn't kill yourself.
Right.
But short of that, you know, I'm not going to force people to do shit they don't want to do.
When you end up running in the crack house, let me know so I can come video document the miracle.
Right.
I want to see it. Man, yeah, you said guilt in there. I had guilt written down already. I knew that was a big part of this and what was going on because that's our human challenge. Okay, so in my mind, I say that a lot, in my mind. Maybe I should stop saying that. I think humans come to Earth and we have one goal, self-actualization. And what does that mean? Because it's a weird word. It means figuring out who the fuck we are and why and what we do and what matters to us. It's just figuring out who Billy is and being Billy. That's the only goal, right? Instantly upon birth, there's these situations that take place that what your body tells you to do in the moment to be self-actualized and be true to your authentic self ends up being conflicting with what our caregivers or the worldly environmental reaction around us tells us is okay, right? Which is procedural learning, a different part of what we get, which is if A happens, then B happens, right? I need food and love and protection from these big, large people around me, so I got to do what they want, and yet also my body is telling me I got to do what it says to do. So one of the very early instances, right, babies, explore your world, babies. Your body tells you put all that shit in your mouth
right,
to figure out what it is, right? And your caregiver says, out of fear, oh, my God, don't do that. That's terrible. You can't put shit in your mouth, right? Screams at you because they're scared. And now we have instantly broken apart who the fuck we are and what we're supposed to do in the world. We're supposed to put shit in our mouth to figure out if it's edible or not and explore it. And we're supposed to not piss our parents off and don't ever do that again. Right? Before we've ever had a fucking narrative thought or learned a word. And it's like that makes us branch into trying to live two lives throughout our whole life. We got our one life of trying to be who we think we are, and then we got our other life of what everybody put on us and told us is what we're supposed to be. And then we fill our life with the life of two people. Ours and those people telling us what to do. And then we're fucking miserable because it's too much shit. And like the answer is to prune away some of that stuff so that we have more space and can only be one of those people in one life. That was a lot to say. And like that's what I think happens in the background that leads to this place where we are very confused and conflicted about what is right for our body. Because there's no right. There's no right. Billy, if you came in here today and shared with me that you wanted to devote the rest of your life to helping this one individual realize that their life is worth living, what a fucking noble cause, buddy. And I believe you could do it, honestly. I believe with enough investment, any human could be helped and healed. But who gives enough of a fuck or has the time?
Right.
Honestly.
Or what are you sacrificing in order to
right.
do that?
Right. So you could have that noble cause. You know what? Nothing is more important than saving this man's life. That is a human life, most valuable thing on earth. I'm going to help him save it. Or you could be the guy that says, that's not my fucking problem at all. And these people in my house need all my fucking attention because I've, you know, kind of unconsciously botched that for a lot of years. And they need a lot of my time right now in this little window I have to try to give them something else. And I would say there's nothing wrong with that either. That guy needs to find his own way. That's not really your problem. But the problem is that we, because of this divide we get early on, don't know what's right for us. And we have all this conflicting emotions, right? Because when we go and do what we think is right for us, we were programmed to feel guilt because somebody else is unhappy with that reaction. And we don't like when other people are unhappy with us. But when we do the thing that the world wants us to do, we feel fucking miserable and resentful and angry. And why do I got to do all this shit? He ain't doing nothing for himself. And neither of those answers feels very good.
Yeah.
So I think this is what you're saying in a very small way about this one particular instance in your life that, it, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, you're going to figure out what you got to do for this guy and where your line is and all that. But like the process of doing it, I think, is the process of figuring out what fucking matters to Jason or Billy for each of us in our lives and how we want to live and what's important to us. Like to me, this is the only question to ask about everything.
Right. And that's where I'm grateful, like recovery's taught me to talk to people that I love and respect and how they're living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so one of the first things I do is I call my sponsor. One of the reasons I picked the guy that I have as a sponsor is because he does live a very different recovery life than I had been. I'm doing better now. But he was like super sponsored a lot of people, did a lot of like connection with sponsees, like never hesitate. Like if he don't hear from people, he's texting them or calling them. Hey, what are you doing? How's it going? I hadn't heard from you in a while. You know, like just very different from the way that I was sort of quote unquote taught to sponsor.
Programmed.
He was also very, you know, has sponsees like to his house and invites people over and gets really like involved and takes active effort. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like that's so different than I was always like, I'm sitting back here, like whatever, waiting, like all the effort needs to come from you.
Right.
And I put forth zero and I just meet you at your level of effort. And so I picked this person because they had that different, you know, approach. And I know he's definitely been way more outgoing with trying to get people into treatment and things like that. So, to be able to call him and like talk about, hey, how do you decide like where the lines are and what you're willing to do and what you're willing to put out and, you know, money wise, like money, you know, $20 isn't going to hurt me. Give the guy $20. You know what I mean? If he really needs, cause it's, oh, I need food. Can you give me some money for some food? And it's like, well, I don't know if I can give you money for food. I can get you some food, you know, it's like that shit. But then I'm like, well, if he wants $20, is $20 going to really kill me? Like, I got $20. It's not a big deal. But is that the best way to help? Is that the best thing to do? Hmm. And ultimately, I think that what heals people that are really struggling with addiction is just compassion and love and helping them to learn to love themselves, you know, and that's where it starts.
But how do you do that?
Right. And it's just giving them $20 going to do that, you know?
So let me, one of the things I was thinking of when you started this conversation was you were talking about and explaining, which I loved because I don't think of this. I just assume people know everything. What the sponsor-sponsee relationship is kind of like. I thought that was brilliant of you to explain that because we do have a lot of listeners that aren't in programs necessarily. And I want to say from when I was going through my schooling and my training to be a therapist, I always felt like I had this thing, this I've been sponsoring / mentoring / guiding people for years coming into this. And I always felt like it was a valuable piece to draw on. Interestingly, so many of the people that I spoke with that were the educators or the guides along the way kind of poo-pooed the the experience there, right? Or like, hey, yeah, that's good experience, but don't get that confused with what we do here as therapists and stuff. And like, I want to say from being in the other side, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of information that you learn to be a therapist, hopefully, but like the practice is really, really similar, right? Like the practice of like, caring about somebody, trying to help them figure out their answers for them. And like, yeah, I mean, I think I'm way better at it now, but like,
right.
Same idea. And it was actually making me think sponsors should have weekly fucking appointments with people to check in. Like it would do wonders. Honestly, I think it should be a requirement. But you're talking about a similar feeling that I get sitting in the therapy chair across from people when they've had a really tough, tragic thing happen in their life. When we've had an hour-long session and it doesn't really feel like they feel any fucking different from when they came in. And I'm like, Jesus, I have not done my job. Can I really send this person back out into the world? Are they going to be okay? Like, if I can't fit them in next week for an appointment and they got to wait 2 weeks, like, am I going out of my way and staying later at work and missing my kids so that I can make sure I fit them in? And like...
Right.
All those same kind of questions. Where the fuck is my line? Where's my line? Where am I allowed to put the line that says I've done enough and nobody can judge me from here, or I won't judge myself from here, or I won't feel bad from here? And what I've realized is there's no such fucking thing. It does not exist. There's not a place. You're not going to come up with a solution to that answer.
Well, and I mean, in the 12-step fellowship, I feel like sometimes we even get information that we're supposed to not have these lines and boundaries, that we're supposed to go above and beyond to help our fellow addicts and stuff. And or at least you hear the stories, you know what I mean? The people that say, oh, you know, me and another guy went and drugged this guy out of the crack, you know, and it's just like, you know, I guess there's a part of me that wishes that that was me, but then I'm like, that doesn't sound healthy or good.
here's what I think is the crazy part, right? I feel like I am more of the passionate, I will run around and save people from crack houses or think I can or whatever. Like, that is more my mentality, and I don't ever hear that shit around the rooms. Like, what always stuck out to me was the very strict rules about how quickly you cut people off and rigidly. And so it's interesting that I'm fascinated by being one guy, but what stands out is this awfulness of these other people. And I feel like you got that on the other side.
Yeah.
But that's fascinating. I wonder if both things are happening, but we're only seeing the opposite one because it's the one that sticks out to us.
Probably.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Dude.
We pick out what. Yeah. You know.
When you said that, I was like, that's so fucking crazy. That is so funny. Yeah. Interesting, because I definitely, my experience is how the rules are, how quickly you get away from that, and that's their job, and they need to work the fucking steps or die. It's not your fault.
Yeah,
that's what I always heard.
Like you talked about, like, it's what's most important, I think, for me is figuring out what I'm okay with, and at the end of the day, do I feel like I've done the best that I could, and it's okay to ask myself those questions, you know what I mean, to have those questions, and to like run it by, you know, people and talk with my wife and her to just validate, like, hey, look, you know, you gave the guy some options. There's plenty of options here. We've told him what we're willing to do. And like, that's one thing that I have learned and I really try to be careful with in anyone who's specifically with people that are actively using. But most of the time, anyone that's reaching out to me for help, because I have like family members that struggle with addiction and they won't ask for like recovery type help, but they always need some kind of favors, whether it's watching kids or doing other stuff. And I usually try to like be like, my initial reaction most of the time is, I'm not fucking helping you because you're using it. And anything that I do is going to be actively helping you.
Enabling.
Right.
Right.
And so then I try to get to a place of, all right, so what am I willing to do? And most of the time, I'm willing to be a little bit uncomfortable. You know what I mean? I'm willing to give a little bit. But having sort of clear guidelines about what that is and what I'm willing to do, and then being waiting, like not feeling like I have to immediately reply, but waiting until I figure out what that is and what I'm comfortable with. And then, you know, replying, you know, with family members sometimes it might be like, hey, I can't necessarily do that, but if you need, you know, this other thing, or, you know, one of my daughters might be able to help if you want to pay them, you know, you know, something like that of giving them so that they don't feel like rejected, because I do think a huge part of us healing is feeling loved and cared about and appreciated. And it's hard these days to like reach out and ask people for help or express a vulnerability. So I do want to try to honor that in people. The problem is that not everyone's authentic, and a lot of times they're not really asking for what they really want, and
they're asking for what they want, but not what they need.
Right.
You know, and that's where I think a lot of our self-care is upside down in our world, is that we all learned and got programmed how to give ourselves what we want in the moment, but not what we really need.
Right.
And that's beneficial for us. So like, coming from that standpoint, truthfully, the most loving thing you could do for the sponsee in Jason's brain, of course, in my world that does not exist on the earth for sure, is go kidnap that motherfucker.
Yeah.
Go kidnap him, take him out into the fucking woods, hold him hostage, and the whole time be gentle and loving and say, look, man, I know this fucking hurts, but like, this is what's best for you, and I need to give you what's best for you even when you don't want that.
So funny enough, I've always said that's what I was going to do with my kids.
I know, and I actually think you're right. I actually think you're right at this point, dude.
That's what I would do.
I thought
with
you were crazy
kids
at one point, but I think you're right now. No, I think that's the most loving thing we could do for somebody, is give them what they need instead of what they want in a loving way. because that's the program and they need to be able to give it to themselves. That's their fucking problem, is that they can't make the choice to give themselves what they need instead of what they want. So, like, I kind of have to if I really want to love them. But I don't think it's any less loving, right, to say to yourself in that situation, or for Jason to say to himself in that situation, my family needs all the time they can get from me right now. My son has already mentioned to me that I work a lot of evenings, he feels like, even though in my mind it's only two a week. But there has been a third one where I've been at my daughter's basketball games a lot. So, like, I get what he's saying. But, like, right, in my mind, to go kidnap this gentleman and take him away for 2 weeks or a month to help him is super loving. And yet, there's nothing less loving about me saying my family needs all this love right now, and that guy's going to have to figure it out some other way.
Yeah. And not to mention the long-term jail repercussions.
Possibly, potentially, yeah. If he doesn't like it afterwards, right. Yes, that's possible. I say you kidnap him until, I don't know, until he's better and he doesn't want
to
try.
Until he agrees not to try.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, that's when you know he's healed.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, from that understanding of, like, both of those are super loving choices and neither could be bad or wrong, why do both feel like neither is the solution?
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, understanding, like, we're all in different places in our lives too. Like, what I can do today is probably more than I could have done a few years ago, just because I did have young kids that, right, needed a lot more attention.
Yeah.
My kids are older now, you know, they're fairly independent. You know, my daughters are both adults doing adulting things, so they don't need daily, you know, check-ins and support and that stuff. I mean, we see them all the time and have dinner with them on a regular basis, but pretty high functioning, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the demands of life aren't as high. So I am able to give more and do more, you know, and I have been doing that with most guys that I sponsor more than in the past.
I would say yes. And you also have spoken over the last few months about your marriage and putting a lot of effort into that and yourself. And, like, all the time you invest here potentially could be time not invested there, right? It could also, I mean, helping him could be investing in yourself. We don't know, right?
Like, right,
there's so many aspects of it. And that's where I think we're all coming from the wrong starting point of intention in trying to solve it. And that's why we can't solve it. That's why both forks look bad.
Right.
Right. Okay. So this isn't necessarily the ideal situation to do this for in my mind, but that's okay. So I'm taking a piece of paper and I'm going to divide it into two columns, and I'm going to have column A and column B, right? Really easy. Nothing tricky there. And column A, what I think we're doing, this is our two choices in every situation, it seems like. In this situation, I think, is a little trickier. It doesn't have as fine lines for the columns, but I think we'll still be able to do it. Column A turns into something, we talked about that procedural learning versus self-actualization. Column A is more the self-actualization in my mind. So this is doing things the way I really authentically want to do them in my life. So we're going to call it my way, right? But every time I do things this way, it comes with this guilt you're talking about. Like, I'm not doing something right, or I'm getting it wrong, or not doing enough, or at least question myself around, is this the place where I'm supposed to stop? So column A is my way, but feeling guilty and bad about it. Column B is the procedural learning thing that I got from the world. This is where that part of me says, will people judge me? Will I judge me? Where's the line where I could explain it and somebody's going to be understanding and say, you did enough, you're a good person? So this is like what the world expects of me. So I call it expectations that I have on myself or the world has on me, either way, right? And this generally, I know everybody pushes back against my calling it miserable. It feels like suffering of some sort. It feels like pressure on you. It feels like having to do something in a way you don't want to do. Obligation, like all these kind of ideas, right? We have to go to this family event because it will be talked about if we don't go, not necessarily because we want to be there. And we come to this fork in the road with every decision we want to make because we have these two parts of us inside, and both of them feel like losers. Neither of them feels like a win. And here's the problem I think we're doing, though. We're creating a column C in our head that does not actually exist in real life. And in this column C, we get everything we want. Right? It's magical.
There's a perfect solution.
It's magical thinking. It says some way, if I just think hard enough, try hard enough, work hard enough, do hard enough, this will fix itself because I will be able to do what I want and it will just feel good. I won't feel guilty. And I get stuck because I believe that that will somehow materialize someday. And that's going to be the solution for all this. When I can accept that column C does not exist, it's not a real thing, then I start to understand the picture better. What I'm really choosing between is this thing everybody wants me to do that's been feeling awful that I've been doing most of my life. That's where I've been sitting in column B, trying to live up to everybody's obligations and expectations and feeling like shit. Or I can figure out how to deal with guilt and live the life that's actually going to feel good. Once I eliminate column C, I don't have to be stuck there in that cycle anymore. And I know I got to figure this out. I need to know one of these options and it has to not feel shitty. What do you think of that?
Yeah. I mean, my only thing there is, I, at least for myself, I feel like some of my guilt had to do with doing what I wanted to do and not what I was supposed to do, at least for me personally.
Yeah, the guilt is around doing what you want to do.
Right.
The doing what you're supposed to do just makes you feel not good in your body. That's what you've been living, not feeling all that great because...
Well, so I think for myself, like my, saying like my active addiction and like doing things that, I don't know, maybe, and this is where I'm like, I don't know, I did want to do, I didn't want to do. Like, I didn't conform to those social norms and those pressures of things that you were supposed to do.
Right.
I neglected the family obligations. I neglected the whatever, and then felt like shit about it.
Right. So the back end of that that explains it is that in that moment, what you wanted was to feel at peace, at ease, content in your body, loved, cared for, okay in the world. And you didn't have that. And that's a need. So you had a hunger for that need, just like you would for food. And at some level, when that need wasn't being met by the world, just like if they weren't feeding you, you would fucking shoot somebody and take the food if you got hungry enough.
Right.
That's what happened with drugs, only it was your emotions.
Right.
It's not really a choice at that point. That's survival. That's what, if we can understand that that's what was happening there, you weren't picking that. That's your nervous system trying to help itself. Right, to survive. So, like, yes, you were trying to get the thing you wanted, which was to feel accepted, and there was guilt around that because it required practices that weren't good for you.
Yeah, so I guess what I, and I don't know how this, it felt like in your picture that we're only supposed to do the column A and not really the column B.
I think so.
And I guess my, I feel like anyway, my experience was almost, not always, but probably half the time was that when I started doing the column B stuff, I felt like, oh, I don't think I'm a piece of shit as much anymore.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because I felt like a piece of shit being neglectful and dishonest and a liar and a thief.
Like, yes, yes.
So there's, you know.
Well, and this is that weird part where, like, if you could have not felt like those things in the first place, you'd have never done those things to feel better. And
okay,
the part
right.
things from column B would have been your column A. You would right. have been the guy who wanted to go to work because that's what provided money for your loving family because you felt good.
Yeah.
Not the guy who needed relief from his hunger.
Yeah. And you know? I guess I do look at like a lot of situations, especially those column B ones now. And we will actively have those conversations in our family of like, all right, so why are we going to this thing? Like what?
Right.
Because obviously it's giving up time and we all, that's a valuable resource right now, yeah. you know, and family live might be far away. So it's an hour and a half drive to a 3-hour party. That's an hour and a half home. That's a whole day, you know. And so we will actively talk about, well, why are we going? Is this worth it? Is this a situation that we feel like we should or shouldn't do? And
right.
then that helps when you make the decision not to have all that misery around it. Like at least you're. Thinking through those options and realize what you're sacrificing and why you're sacricing
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes there is still some sacrifice, but at least you're like, okay, well, at least I can be okay with it because I know why. I'm not just doing it and feeling miserable.
You have a why.
Right.
Yeah, that's a old Nietzsche quote, right? He who has a why can endure almost anyhow. And that's what I feel like in my life. I step back and I said, why the fuck do I do all this shit? Why do I go to work every day? To make somebody else rich? Because that's what's happening. Right. No. Jason goes to work every day to make enough money for Jason and his family to feel okay. But what amount is that? And have I been making too much and working too hard for it? I think I have.
And the flip side of thinking through some of that and making those decisions is like when we can't do some of those things or don't do some of those things, makes the guilt less. You know what I mean? Like, because we do the things we can do and we don't do the things that either aren't worth it or aren't really within line with our values or what we think we can do.
Right.
And it makes it easier.
And I think talking about it in community makes it easier personally, because if I was the one sitting there just having this conversation in my head, it previously in my life, at least, it was never enough. It didn't matter that I showed up at the ones I could. If I missed any, I wasn't enough. And like, that's where I got to understand that. And I said this before on here, guilt is a yellow light, not a red light. We all stop when we feel guilt and we're like, oh, and this is fucked up because I teach everybody all day long. I'm like, listen to your body. Your body knows what it's doing. And then they're like, but I feel guilt. And I'm like, but that's wrong.
Don't feel that.
Right. Well, it's understanding that, yes, you feel guilt, but it's because you were programmed with the wrong fucking information. You were programmed with by people who felt guilty. That's why you feel guilt, right? You weren't shown that it's okay. Nobody modeled that you just do what the fuck is right for you and that's enough. And like, had you had that modeled, you wouldn't even question it. There wouldn't be no guilt. So it's like, yes, you have guilt, but the guilt, but why? That's the real question. Where does the guilt come from? Who gave you the message that says you need to do this or more or this particular piece of it? Where does that come from? Because you don't have to do anything. Nobody believes, I don't believe, Billy, that you have to do any more than whatever the fuck you want to do, honestly. I mean, you show up, you care about your kids, you talk about it week in, week out, you care about your marriage, you talk about it when we come on here, you care about being a guy who shows up in a world as a guy that gives a fuck about the people he loves. What the fuck more do we need from you, Billy? I don't need shit. I think you're a great human already. And there's a part in you that can't believe that or hear it yet. And that's the part that you're fighting against. It ain't none of these people out here. It's that part that can't hear me when I say you're already a fucking great guy. You don't need to do any more to earn it, bro. You're already there.
Well, I guess in the situation like with the sponsees,
doesn't matter. You're already a great human.
Yeah, well,
that's
icing
on the cake.
I get that, and I guess that's what I was thinking. I'm like, I'm trying to think. Like, do I feel like I? And maybe it is. I guess that's an underlying way. I'm like, am I doing enough, or am I doing the
right
things to help? Right. You know,
right. And because like, your right things are what's right for Billy, not him.
Right.
You're already doing all the right things. You're an amazing guy, dude. You're one of the most stand-up people, and I admire you. And, like, I just wish you could see you the way I see you.
Thank you. Well, there's always, I always think that, like, what did they say? Like, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Fucking right it is.
You know? Yeah. And, like, trying to be like, well, my intentions were to be helpful, but I didn't do shit. Like, and then it's like, well, you know.
Right.
Well, all the intention in the world doesn't make things happen. You know? So
true.
And I am a person that always feels like there's more can be done. There's always more to do.
Yes.
Which is
that
an impossible.
Is
yeah.
That's
yeah.
the part.
Which I do recognize
life.
That.
Yeah. That's my.
Try to own it.
For me, that's dead. Yeah. There's always something more I could have done to have avoided this disastrous thing. I just should have thought through it better or harder or put more effort into it or. And it's all my fault that it just didn't work out, and it's never going to work out.
Yeah, or
that's
like
the story I got.
I'm powerful enough to change the course of someone's life. Yeah. You know,
like, shit should be different because I want it to be different.
Right.
Yeah. It's crazy, man.
Or like it just that if I just maybe if I just do this one right thing, you know, then they'll see and they'll come back and they'll. You know.
Fuck, dude. You just pointed at something I am still very caught up in that I am not aware enough of. That I do that so much.
Right.
I'm like, oh, they just need to hear me say it this way. Then right. It'll make total sense. Oh, wait, I got a new analogy. This one you can't argue with. And they're always
arguing
with.
They'll have that light bulb moment.
Yeah, it ain't ever going to fucking happen, dude. They all feel like light bulb moments for me, though. I'm like, this right. is fucking brilliant. People will get this if I say it this way.
Right.
Have you found that listening to the Recovery Sort Of podcast has helped you in your day-to-day journey? Please share the message of compassion and well-being with the loved ones in your life. Connect with us more at recoverysortof.com, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, YouTube, and other social media spaces. And have a great week.